Picture this. You are seeing Khalil, a 62-year-old man with peripheral vascular disease, in your vascular surgery clinic. He reports that he can't get much exercise because his calves hurt whenever he exerts himself. He's particularly noticed this when walking around his property. He's had several tests performed that report the ankle brachial index, ABI, which is measured by the systolic blood pressure in the ankle divided by the systolic blood pressure in the arm. A normal ABI is 1.0 to 1.4. Khalil's most recent value was 0.7. He is wondering what this means. How do you explain why the systolic blood pressure in the ankle would be higher than the systolic blood pressure in the arm? What could a reduced ABI signify? Welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Laurel Toft, bringing cardiology from our bricks to your ears. After completing this brick, you will be able to 1. Describe the physical factors that determine blood pressure. 2. Define wall tension, how it is calculated, and how it is used to explain blood vessel size. And 3. Define blood vessel elastance and explain how it maintains blood pressure. Part 1. What is blood pressure? The cardiovascular system transports nutrients to the entire body via the blood circulating through the heart, arteries, and veins. For blood to travel throughout the cardiovascular system, it must be pressurized. Hemodynamics is the technical term used to describe the physical properties of how blood flows through the cardiovascular system. In this audio brick, we're going to be discussing the physical factors that determine the blood pressure, including the intrinsic properties of the blood vessel wall. Blood pressure, or BP, consists of two driving forces. First, arterial pressure. What we commonly call blood pressure is typically the pressure exerted by the blood against the arterial walls, also termed the hydrostatic pressure. So when we measure a patient's BP, we are measuring their arterial blood pressure in large arteries, such as the brachial artery when using a blood pressure cuff on the upper arm. Second, venous pressure. This is a measurement of vascular pressure in the veins, and it is much lower than arterial pressure. The venous pressure is important, though, for returning the blood back to the heart from the periphery. First, let's discuss arterial blood pressure. In clinical medicine, we mostly focus on the arterial blood pressure, and we'll call it BP. It is the most common pressure that we measure in routine practice, and high arterial BP is correlated with many diseases, like heart disease, renal disease, and stroke. We measure arterial BP in millimeters of mercury and record it as two numbers, systolic blood pressure and diastolic blood pressure. We measure it this way because the main driver of the cardiovascular system is the heart, acting as a pump with a contraction cycle called systole and a relaxation cycle called diastole. The blood pressure changes during each part of the cycle, so we record the two numbers to give a better sense of the different pressures the body is experiencing throughout the entire cardiac cycle. The normal arterial BP in adults is 120 over 80 millimeters of mercury. This also indicates that the blood flow in the larger arteries is pulsatile, not steady, because of these varying pressures during systole and diastole. Time for a clinical correlation. Hypertension, or high blood pressure, is one of the most common diseases seen in medical practice. It is defined as persistent blood pressure of greater than 130 over 80 millimeters of mercury. Now, as the large arteries gradually subdivide into smaller and smaller branches, called arborization, like tree branches, the pulsatile pressure is gradually converted into a steady, single capillary pressure. This conversion occurs because of the increasing distensibility of the blood vessels as the blood moves from larger to smaller vessels. The single steady pressure supports the steady delivery of oxygen and nutrients to tissues. It's also a main determinant of whether serum stays in the capillary or exits into the interstitium. Here, we'll focus on this steady capillary hydrostatic pressure. Part 2. What physical factors affect the capillary hydrostatic pressure? The capillary hydrostatic pressure is used to push fluid from the small vessels or capillaries into the tissues for the delivery of oxygen and nutrients. It is dependent, for starters, on the volume of blood in a vessel. Additionally, four key physical factors affect the capillary hydrostatic pressure, and those are gravity, blood vessel compliance, viscous resistance, and inertia. None of these factors affect the body's minute-to-minute regulation of blood pressure, but each is important in determining the baseline or resting pressure. Let's start with gravity. Gravity produces a pressure difference between two points of different height, so the blood pressure is higher in the feet than in the head. But both the arterial and venous pressures are higher in the feet, so the net pressure that drives fluid forward through the circulation stays the same, regardless of where it is measured. Unless you're an astronaut, gravity remains fixed, so it's not a variable that factors into clinical practice on Earth. Next, vascular compliance. Compliance is the stretchiness of a blood vessel. When the heart pumps blood during systole, the blood shoots out of the left ventricle into the aorta and from there flows out to the rest of the body. A significant amount of force propels that initial jet of blood. If the aorta were like a rigid pipe, the pressure in the aorta during systole would spike and blood would flow very quickly through the arterial system. Then, when the heart relaxed during diastole, there would be no driving force behind the blood, the arterial pressure would drop significantly, and basically the blood would stop moving until the next contraction cycle began. In reality, blood flow remains relatively steady. Why? Well, in order to maintain a more constant flow of blood, the arteries and veins have built-in stretchiness called compliance. Compliance is defined as the change in volume of the vessel, delta V, divided by the change in pressure, delta P, in that vessel, or delta V over delta P. The more compliant a vessel, the more it will stretch when pressure is applied to it. A capillary or thin vein will stretch even when only a small amount of pressure is applied, meaning that it has high compliance. This means that veins stretch without producing much inward recoil force, allowing them to hold a large proportion of the total blood volume. Another way to say this is that a very compliant vessel has a large change in volume with very little change in pressure. In contrast, the aorta, with its thick muscular walls, will stretch much less, even with all the pressure from the heart pumping into it, and therefore has lower compliance than veins do. The aorta also has a strong inward recoil force when it is stretched, like a rubber band, which is important to drive blood from the aorta out to the systemic circulation when the heart is in diastole. In general, large arteries are less compliant or stiffer than small arterioles, and small arterioles are less compliant than veins. For a particular part of the vasculature, the compliance can be changed by constriction of the vessels, by diseases that affect the wall of the vessel, and by normal aging. As a person ages, calcification stiffens the blood vessel wall, making the vessel less compliant. This is one reason for increased blood pressure with age. Clinical correlation time. In arterial aneurysms, the vessel wall may become overly compliant and dilate like a balloon, creating a weak arterial wall that may rupture and bleed. This can occur in diseased arteries in the brain or the aorta itself. Let's check your knowledge to see if you got all of that. Question: how would calcification of arterial walls affect the blood pressure? Calcification would cause the artery to become less compliant, and the blood pressure must increase to maintain blood flow. Let's move on to discussing another factor affecting hydrostatic capillary pressure, the viscous resistance of the blood. In a fluid system like the circulatory system, the change in pressure along the vessel equals the flow, Q, times the resistance in the tube, or R. The equation to remember is delta P equals Q times R. One component of resistance in a blood vessel is the viscosity of the blood, which can be thought of as its thickness or the resistance to moving forward. Blood cells and proteins, for example fibrinogen, increase the viscosity of the blood. These components increase resistance to blood flow and increase the pressure needed for the blood to move forward. Viscosity changes very little in healthy people. However, viscosity does change in disorders like polycythemia vera or leukemia, where the number of blood cells may increase markedly, increasing viscosity and resistance to flow. In such diseases, the flow might drop, causing low perfusion of oxygen to the tissues. And the last physical component to discuss is inertia. Inertia is the tendency of something to stay in its same motion or path unless acted upon by an external force. Stated another way, it is the resistance to change in motion. Blood certainly has this tendency, but is slowed by the resistance from the blood vessels. And blood flow is not constant over time. It's faster in systole and slower in diastole. For blood to keep moving forward, the blood's hydrostatic pressure needs to be high enough to overcome the resistance from the blood vessels. Part 3. What is wall tension in a blood vessel? So far, we've talked about the physical factors that determine the blood pressure. Now, let's look at the effect of the blood pressure on the vascular wall. Among other things, it explains how hypertension, high blood pressure, can damage the arterial wall and lead to disease. The damage to blood vessels in hypertension is not due actually to the high pressure itself, but rather to the abnormal wall tension generated by the high pressure. Tension is the force applied to a given area of the vessel wall, and it can cause damage to the wall if it's too high. But what exactly does that mean? What is wall tension in a blood vessel? Well, it is the force per unit area that is required for the wall to withstand the pressure of the blood inside the vessel. The higher the blood pressure, the higher the wall tension that is required to contain the blood within the vessel without the vessel dilating or enlarging. You can also think of the wall tension as the inward force applied to the wall of the blood vessel caused by the elasticity of the vessel pulling the wall inward. Wall tension opposes the outward pressure of the blood and keeps the vessel from exploding like an overblown balloon. Well, how do we calculate this wall tension? This is where the law of Laplace comes in. T equals delta P times little r. And here, T equals wall tension. Delta P is the transmural pressure, or the difference in pressure between the inside and outside of the vessel. And little r is the radius of the vessel. So in other words, tension on a vessel wall is directly proportional to the radius of the vessel and to the transmural pressure. The pressure on the inside of the blood vessel exceeds the pressure outside of it, so the transmural pressure is directed outward. Now let's talk about how wall tension relates to vessel wall thickness. Remember that the wall of the artery is much thicker than the wall of the vein. A capillary wall would be even thinner than a vein wall. Why is this? Well, the explanation lies in the wall tension equation we just described. For a given blood pressure, an increase in the radius of the blood vessel leads to an increase in wall tension. So wall tension is very high in big vessels like the aorta. This implies that large arteries must have thick walls in order to withstand this high level of tension. In contrast, capillaries have a very small radius and much less wall tension, so they don't need a thick wall. This is a good thing since it's then easier for fluids to diffuse through the thin wall of the capillary, which is essential for gas and nutrient exchange in the tissues. High wall tension in the circulatory system leads to vascular disease, since stress on the walls can result in damage to the inner lining of the vessel called the endothelium. Think of a blood vessel like a piece of piping. It receives stress against the walls of the pipe from the fluid constantly pushing against it. There may also be damage to the pipe from rust or erosion. And as we all know, old plumbing can be unreliable. Sometimes a pipe will burst and water will flood your house. Similarly, damaged blood vessels can also burst if the wall tension becomes too high. Part 4. What is elastance in a blood vessel? We've so far been generalizing our discussion as if a blood vessel were a perfect cylinder with fixed walls, but that's actually not true. Arterial walls are an organized system of endothelial cells lining the vessel lumen, which are surrounded by smooth muscle cells, and finally an outside layer of connective tissue. The connective tissue contains collagen fibers that are both rigid and non-distensible, as well as fibers that are elastic. Elastic fibers are rubber-like, allowing the vessel to stretch as blood pressure increases. This elastance of a blood vessel is actually the inverse of the compliance we talked about earlier. Elastance is the tendency of the vessel to spring back or recoil inward after it is stretched, like a rubber band. You'll sometimes hear these terms, elastance and compliance, talked about somewhat fluidly, but it's really important to remember the definition of each and how they differ, even though they are both describing the properties of blood vessel walls. So, how does elastance affect the blood pressure? When the initial jet of blood leaves the left ventricle and enters the aorta during systole, some of the energy is used to stretch the wall of the aorta, storing it there as elastic potential energy. Then, when the heart finishes contracting, the aorta recoils inward, using that elastic potential energy to squeeze down and continue pushing blood forward, maintaining blood flow through diastole until the heart can pump again. Blood vessel elastance is why our blood pressure is 120 over 80 millimeters of mercury and not 120 over 0 millimeters of mercury. That 80 millimeters of mercury in diastole is due to the elastance of the arteries. And that's it for blood pressure. Let's check your knowledge and see what we've learned today. Can you define arterial and venous pressures? Arterial pressure is the pressure exerted by blood on the arterial wall. Venous pressure, the pressure exerted on the venous wall, is much lower than arterial pressure. Next, can you name the four physical factors that contribute to blood pressure? Gravity, blood viscosity, vascular compliance, and inertia all contribute to blood pressure. Now, what is compliance? Compliance is the stretch built into blood vessels. The more compliant a vessel, the more it will stretch when pressure is applied to it. Next, what is the law of Laplace and what does it describe? The law of Laplace explains the relationship between the tension on a vessel wall and transmural pressure. The equation for the law of Laplace can be stated as T equals delta P times little r, where T is tension, delta P is transmural pressure, and r is the radius of the vessel. And lastly, what is elastance and how does it impact blood pressure? Elastance is the tendency of the vessel wall to spring back or recoil inward after being stretched, like a rubber band. Elastance is why blood pressure is 120 over 80 millimeters of mercury, not 120 over 0 millimeters of mercury. And we're done. Armed with your newfound knowledge, let's think back to your patient from the beginning of this episode. Remember that you are seeing Khalil, who has a lowered ankle brachial index. He's wondering what this reduced ABI means, and you are explaining to him why the systolic blood pressure in the ankle is normally higher than the systolic blood pressure in the arm. You tell him that gravity is one of the four factors that affect hydrostatic pressure, producing a difference in pressure between two points at different heights. As a result, the systolic blood pressure at the ankle would normally be higher than at the arm, and therefore the ABI should be one or slightly greater. The ABI is a commonly performed test used to diagnose peripheral vascular disease and then to follow patients over time. Khalil's ABI is under 1, meaning that the blood pressure is lower in his ankle than in his arm, and this indicates a reduced blood supply to the legs, most likely due to narrowed arteries. He has described classic symptoms of claudication, which means pain in the legs with exertion due to inadequate blood flow through these narrowed arteries. You reassure him that with medication and exercise, blood flow to the legs and his ABI can improve. And that's our show. If you liked this episode, send us a comment or give us a thumbs up. Until next time!